Start this. Okay, great. So how's everybody doing? How's your semester starting out? A bummer?
Too much work.
Huh? Too much work. Already? Oh, my. All right, well, just tell me the professor's name and I'll have him beaten up. Oh, and Mel agrees with you.
We miss having you, Dr. Goodman.
What?
We miss having you in class.
Oh, I miss having you guys too, actually. I'm just starting to get to know the other half of the cohort. And it's too early to make any assessments. I don't know how they're gonna work out. I do know that I had some difficulty getting people to send me their photos. I don't know whether they were shy or whatever, but it took a couple of prompts to get everybody's photo. Anyway, I know there are a few people who couldn't join us today. They are joining us in their cars. I am also recording this for the podcast. Taylor was gracious enough to create a couple of more links in my website for the last few trainings that we're going to do. But we got to make a big decision today. We got to make a huge decision, and that decision is whether we're going to select the scores G or the scores Q when we ultimately rate the real sample. And I'll tell you, if you read my email message, you'll see that you guys did much, much better on the scores Q than on the scores G, which actually surprised me. But then I thought about it, and you know, you guys are a few months removed from using the scores G for coding, and maybe because we've been doing the scores Q more recently, maybe it's a recency effect rather than a primacy effect. Mel, I see your hand.
I'm so confused because, hi everyone. I'm so confused because during the scores G, I thought it was such a breeze. I was like, okay, this is so much easier for me because I can focus on each individual scale and I can go back and look on look for like the specific scale. And then I scored, my reliability was like 0.1. It was terrible. So I don't know, maybe a little bit of practice or maybe, I don't know. I was just very off, but I liked that process more.
Yeah, you know what's interesting with the scores G, if you look at the correlations, not just the means that I calculated for everybody, but the correlations themselves, you know, some people were negatively correlated with each other. I mean, and that blows my mind. And then others were like 0.9 with each other, you know? Like, let me just pull it out here. I printed out the outputs. So for example, I'm not picking on anybody. We don't have a gold standard, so it's meaningless. But like, for example, I'm looking at Sorrel and Brian. Sorrel and Brian on the scores G were correlated 0.846. Now these are correlations. These are not intra-class. These are Pearson correlations, not intra-class. If it were intra-class, it'd be even higher. So, you know, Brian and Sorrel are looking at things very, very similarly. And then take, for example, Teresa and Elisa were correlated negative 0.24. You know, so, but each of those folks were, you know, highly rated with other people. Like Elisa was correlated with Rachel 0.661, which is fine, right? And Teresa, just give me a minute. Teresa was correlated with Sorrel 0.467, which is a little low, but it's still very positive, right? So I'm not sure what to make of that. It just really puzzled me. Whereas the Q-sort correlations were all, you know, pretty decent. I think with some more training, you know, everybody would get higher. I mean, the lowest mean correlation was 0.415. But that's, I mean, that's better than, like, Mel, what was yours? It was 0.1244. So the lowest mean correlation on the Q sort was 0.415, and one of the lowest was Mel's for the G scores G 1.135. Or no, what was it? It was 0.1244. So you see the radical difference between the two coding systems. I just like to get people's impressions or what they make of that. What, how do they interpret that? So feel free to, yeah.
Mel
is already saying that you had a good question.
No, she said my rap had a good question. Are we sure we had the same dimensions? Oh, that's a good question. Are we sure we had the dimensions in the same order for the scores, G? So we should, we should make sure that we definitely all had it. But before that, just a quick question. Like, maybe I'm not comprehending, because this seems so obvious to me that we would literally be 0.9 across the board with scores G, like lowest 0.7, honestly. So, for example, when I scroll down in my column, your score is G. I have 0.000 with Mel. That means that not a single one of our dimensions were exactly the same number, correct?
It doesn't exactly mean that. What it means is that the it's hard to explain, that you two, your ratings are random. There's no relationship between your ratings. That doesn't mean that you didn't match once in a while, but it would be randomly, you know, like, so if you scored a 5 and Mel scored a 6, and then you scored a 4 and Mel scored a 5, and then you scored a 3 and she scored a 4, you know, you're off by 1, but there's a trend. This is saying there's no trend whatsoever. That doesn't mean that you didn't match once in a while, but there's no trend involved.
Okay. Right.
That's what that means.
Okay. I'm just really confused. Like, really, really, really.
I am too, but I want to explore Myrov's comment in the chat. And yeah. I'll tell you, Myrov, you made an excellent point. She's driving, by the way. I don't know how she's texting and driving, but I'm not going to ask those questions. You know, I did not check to make sure everybody put their codes in the correct order. I assume everybody received Brian's Excel spreadsheet with the correct order. And I'm assuming that everybody used that order in sending me their ratings. Now, if you did not, please let me know. It would take me a fair amount of work to check 13 Excel spreadsheets. First, I have to find your email message, your original, in my deleted email folder. And then I'd have to open your Excel spreadsheet. And then I have to check your column, your actual dimension column with the one that Brian sent. Did anybody not use Brian's template or maybe put them out of order? Because I think Meyer has a good point that would certainly explain the negative correlations. So Jeremy just put in chat the correct order. And Brian, can you verify that? I mean, I have my book here, but... maybe everybody, except for the people who are driving, maybe you guys can save me some time and you can all check to see whether you used that order that Jeremy just placed in the chat. I'm actually sort of hoping Myrov is right, because that would be an easy explanation for the extremely low reliabilities among some of you. Mel, yours was correct?
Unfortunately, yes.
I don't know, I have a thought that because we were doing the scores Q before, and we said that, I remember in the beginning we were confused about where to put ones that didn't apply, mm-hmm. because for the scores G it was in 5, so for scores Q we said to put it in 1.
Well, so for the scores G, it varies with the dimension.
Right.
So if you look at the bottom of the chapters the PDFs that I sent you, at the bottom of every page is the actual coding system for each of the 8 dimensions. And so in some dimensions, I think a 2 is the default. In some others, it's a 4. I think in 1, it's a 5. So it really depends. There's no common pile number or rating number, anchor point, I should say, that is common across all the dimensions. So that's one of the differences between the scores G and the scores Q.
Yeah, so I didn't do this because, like, I saw that, but I'm saying maybe people forgot that and put ones that I'm not sure.
People being not you.
I have a question. So
yes, Taylor.
This all doesn't make sense to me because I don't know. I'm just like really shocked. So there are 8 piles, and if you look at where we put everything, no one put anything in pile 8 or 7. So wouldn't that automatically bring us a little closer together? Something like.
Yes, it would. Correct.
But we're still so bad.
Well, now you're talking about, are you talking about the scores Q or the scores G? Okay. Yeah, because this is remember we talked about this, it's a child. There's no child in the world who's going to like score off the charts on any of these dimensions. Because children, you know.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that like, we're all right now, like for example, if we go to one of our answers, let's just say we want to, I don't know, self-concept or whatever, mm-hmm. we're all automatically going to be within 5 of each other, which is pretty big of a difference, but that that already shrinks the variability between 1 and 8 to 1 and 5.
Right.
So I'm just like very confused.
Well, what that means is that so when you shrink, it's called attenuation. And so when you have an attenuated range, that means that when you're off, it's more serious.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say
it doesn't take any count. Okay.
Let's say you had a rating system from 1 to 100, just making this up, and you placed an item you gave a rating of 94 from 1 to 100, and then Brian came along and gave a rating of 87. So 87 to 94, there's a 7 rating difference between the two, but in this whole scheme of things, that's still in the same ballpark.
Right.
But if you're on a scale from 1 to 5 and you put it in 4 and someone puts it in 2, you see it's actually a bigger difference given the range. Mathematically, there's a formula that shows how that's the case. I don't want to get into the stats behind it, but I think you understand conceptually what I'm talking about.
I do understand.
Yeah.
I was going to ask this before, but now it makes more sense even more so now. So is it harder for us to do, like, to all match each other on the scores G since there's so many fewer, like, criteria? Like, there's only, what is it, 8 in the end dimensions that we're marking, but technically on the Q, there's like 94 or 93 items or whatever.
Well,
so doesn't that change the way that it
Yeah, fell? that's part of it too, that there are many more observations that we're using to calculate the inter-rater reliability. So it's not only ratings, right? It's also number of observations. So we're increasing the number of observations in the Q sort, in the scores Q. So that, yes, that also plays a role.
Because to me, when I was doing it, it felt like the scores G was easier because
it, like, I'm looking at the overall picture. So when I'm making that number, I'm taking all those factors. But when I do the Q, like, I feel like if I see something that might be in a higher, like, level,
yeah, yeah,
there, I can score that higher, but also score something that's in a low level because I saw that there too. Like, picking mm-hmm. out the individual factors mm-hmm. makes it a little bit harder to me, I think, to have that, like, conceptual number.
Right.
I don't
right.
know if anything I said makes sense.
No, I doubt, but I think what you're saying is that scores G was easier for you. And let's just, so
yeah, in some ways.
Yeah. So let's shift the conversation slightly. So the one issue is, you know, which one gives us a better reliability? Sorrell says the scores Q tolerates more. Whoops. The scores Q tolerates more variability while maintaining high reliability as compared to the scores G then. Yes. Correct. That is correct. And Jeremy's pointing out that we're all within two of each other, but remember, we were trying to work on getting within one of each other. And that's going to be especially important because of the attenuated range that I referred to earlier. This kid, these children whom we're practicing on, you know, are not going to be scoring in the upper ranges of these dimensions. They just aren't. So, and then with the scores Q, you've got 8 piles. Right, similar to you know, in a way, similar to the scores G. You've got, you know, the different rating piles. So the other question here is, actually, you've got one more pile to think about in the scores Q than you do with the scores G, and certainly a lot more items to have to rate. But I'm just curious, so I asked everybody to think about how long it took you to do each rating. And 2 people got back to me. Brian was one of them, and he said that the scores Q took, I think, about 3 times longer than the scores G. And then Mindy got back to me. I don't think Mindy's on the call, because she's at a doctor's appointment, but she also got back to me and she said that the scores G took her 3 times longer than the scores Q. So they had opposite experiences, but I'm kind of curious what the rest of the group's experiences was as far as time is concerned and effort is concerned. Don't all answer at once.
The scores G took me about 30 minutes, and the scores Q takes me like 3 hours.
At really?
Minimum. Yeah, but I think also it's a new, like, this is a completely new format for me, so I have no idea what I'm doing sometimes, and I have to really, really think about it. But yeah, no, it was definitely easier.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Lexi?
I also think that the scores Q usually takes me like at least 3 times the amount of time. I actually, like, I mean, I don't want to speak for her, but could that have been a typo that the G took longer than the Q? Like, maybe she mixed them up, because I can't imagine the G took her 3 times. I mean, maybe it did. Maybe it did.
Well, that's maybe she did mix them up. I mean, if someone can text Mindy, maybe she's sitting in the waiting room and she can answer. I don't know. I don't have her phone number. So maybe somebody can text her and we can find out whether she really meant the opposite of what she said in the email message.
I'll text her.
All right. Thank you. So Sorrell said it took about the same time. So it sounds though for Sorrell was about the same amount of time. And Rachel, you wrote the same, meaning the same, that it, the scores G was faster, or the same, meaning it took you the same amount of time each coding system?
The G takes quicker for me.
The G was quicker.
I think because we, like, last semester, we really went
into it in depth. And then the queue sorting for me takes a really long time just because it's my first time queue sorting. So I really think about each one.
Right.
But the G definitely took longer for me.
Okay. So for people for whom the queue sort was long, took longer, do you think with more practice, it could go more quickly? Or do you think it's more about the coding system itself?
I don't think that the time even bothers me because I really don't mind spending the time on it. It's the fact that sometimes like it just, I think I get somewhat more confused on that like system because like I said before, like if something rates or if there's like one piece to that that rates higher in that like level system, but then something that also rates really, really low, I don't know how to like, I guess, deal with that. And it makes me like think about it a lot. Maybe that made no sense.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Taylor, you took 7 hours, but you know, you were at the top of the heap. So you're the time you took paid off.
Yeah.
I guess so. It's 7 hours of your life you'll never get back.
It takes me so long. Like, I'm just going to say something. I'm sorry if this is contradictory, whatever the word is, controversial. Brian, Mel, Eli, Jeremy, how different is this from any queue story we've ever done?
It's definitely different.
It's very, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm like being, I'm like trying to gather people and like protest. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just like trying to feel validated. It is very different. I have all four QSET expertise, CAQ, CCQ, CPQ, and PQS. I have never taken 7 hours on a transcript before. And I think with this one, the items confuse me. There's one item, for example, can I talk about an item really quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there's a few items that confuse me, but one that is on top of my head that said, has insight or interest into their own emotion. Insight and interest are totally different things. For example, that's like one very quick example. Another one is like, is concerned with ethnic identity. This person in this transcript was very concerned about black and white, but we had no idea what their race was, so it was impossible to code. So if they were black and they were so concerned about the black doll and black people, which was very prevalent in the session, I would have rated that an 8. But we didn't know their race, and that's another issue. But I think that there's a lot of contradicting words in each item, whereas
right.
Previous queue sorting, it'll say rate high if you see X, Y, and Z, rate low on the lower end if you see X, Y, and Z, where these are a lot more complex.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do enjoy it, and I do take into consideration that the G we did not do well in this week, but those are my opinions as of right now. And it takes very long, and it is fun, and I genuinely look forward to noon on Thursdays to see what my number is going to be. Like, I refresh my email, but I'm also, like, terrified. So I don't know if people agree.
So do others feel similarly that the items themselves contain contradictory elements that make it difficult, inherently difficult to code?
It definitely is harder because also you get punished more for not seeing something as someone else. Because with the PQS and other stuff, since it follows a bell curve,
mm-hmm.
if you put it if you put it off, it still doesn't punish you as much. For this, if you don't see something, then you put it in a 1 or non-applicable. And then if you do see it, then it's all the way to the right. So then I feel like with that, that also might be messing with our reliabilities and makes it, you have to be a lot more like scanning the transcript and seeing what's going on and careful with your coding with this one.
With the scores Q. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mel, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that I find myself rereading these items a lot more because, like how Taylor said, there's contradictory information. I'll read it the first time and I'll think it goes somewhere else, and then I'll reread it and then I'll look at the transcript and I'll be like, but this part of it fits with this. And I go back and forth a lot more. And then additionally, I think just the bell curve of the PQS, like unlearning that and then relearning the different levels of this QSOAR is just, I have to like actively do it. So I think that does make it take a little bit longer. And I don't know if I just need more practice, but it does take me a pretty long time to get this done.
So much longer than it would take a PQS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Mindy just texted back. She said that she did mix them up, which I had a feeling.
All right, so everybody, except Sorrel, hers was about equal, but everybody else took much longer on the scores Q. I'll just tell you my own personal bias. Originally, I was preferring that we use the scores Q because it's just a lot more information that we're collecting on each transcript. You know, rather than having 8 data points, you're really collecting 100 data points per transcript. And there's a lot more you can do statistically. And there are a lot more hypotheses that you can test when you have more data points than fewer data points. But on the other hand, you know, I don't want to make this process so onerous on you. And it does give me pause when I hear that there are contradictory elements in the items that make them difficult to use. On the other hand, you know, I'm going to come down on the side of reliability, and we can try to keep working on the scores G with these psychotherapy transcripts, but the reliabilities are going to have to improve dramatically. We can't have any negative reliabilities. That's just that's not going to help us, you know. So if you guys, and I definitely do not want you guys to be using both coding systems again. That's just too much work. But if you guys want to try the scores G on the next transcript, you know, we can go in that direction and start applying the scores G to these practice transcripts. And we'll actually go back and maybe code transcripts that you've already coded with the scores Q, this time using the scores G. How unforgiving it is, the unforgiven. Who knows? We can look at the distributions of everybody, and I, you know, ordered them according to standard deviation and descending order like I normally do. You can do that with the scores G as well as the scores Q. So let me pull that up and see what we come up with. Okay, let me share my screen. Can everybody see that? Everybody good? So, I mean, the standard deviations don't look so bad, right? But, you know, remember, we're looking at like differences of 1 or right on. So anything 2 or more is really an error. So, and for the scores G, the person who was most highly reliable with everybody else was Jeremy. So we can sort of use Jeremy's ratings as kind of a proxy for a gold standard, but there really is no gold standard here. So for affective quality, Jeremy put it in pile 5. All right, so on a little on the higher side, we've got Brian in 3, that's 2 off from Jeremy. We got Andy in 2, that's 3 off. Myrov agreed with Jeremy. Sorrel was at a 3, which is 2 off. Eli agreed with Jeremy. Elisa was at a 3, which is 2 off from Jeremy. Teresa was a 5. That's fine. Rachel was a 3. That's 2 off. Taylor was a 3. That's 2 off. Mel was 3. That's 2 off. Lexi's a 5. So it looks like the most common ratings were a 3 or a 5 for affective quality. And I don't, maybe we could just look at all 8 for now and then go back if you want to. But we'll look at aggression. And
I'm just sorry to interrupt. I'm just wondering if the reason that could be is because the coding system for some of them where 4 is does not apply at all. So we were actually a lot closer than it seems like we are from the reliability ratings. Like if it was in a lineup, you know, maybe we would have been 4s and 5s, but because 4 doesn't really fit for a lot of them.
So what you're saying is that your belief is that some people use 3 as a default and others used 5 as a default?
No, just that for depending on the dimension, for some of the dimensions, the number 4 meant that it did not apply at all. It wasn't seen in the narrative at all. So whereas some people, like we would have had a much smaller variation if it was more linear and it was 3. It applies somewhat, 4 is applies even more, then we would have been 3s and 4s. But because 4 is a full different reading, it kind of skews the numbers and it makes us seem more off than we are, because 4 means something totally different.
Well, we just need to then all agree that something's not applicable.
I think what she's saying is that, like, it's really hard to explain, but I know exactly what you're saying. Like, because, like, let's just say this is 4, this is 5, and this is 3. And 4, let's just say, for example, this first one, affect, whatever. 4 is not applicable. We're, like, right next to each other, but because 4 is here, we have to go split. And that brings us 2 apart from each other. Because 4 is here. Otherwise, we would have been right under.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But because 4 means not applicable,
yes,
we have to split.
I got it now. I hear what you're saying. Okay, I see. I see the problem. I mean, it's a question that I could raise with Michelle or Janelle. They're the ones who wrote the book, literally, on this system. I'm have the book in my hand right now. But I think what they're going to say is, yeah, that's an issue, but you should be able to get reliable in spite of that problem. You should know that it's a 3 versus a 5. I understand what you're saying, 3 and 5. In those cases, a 3 is right next to a 5. But when you go to calculate reliability, it's going to make it look worse than it is. I hear what you're saying. Is that the case here with affective quality?
Affective quality is absent, bland, or limited.
A coding of 4 is a default score when affective quality is absent, bland, or limited. And you guys felt that this affective quality was not absent, bland, or limited. So some of you felt it was largely negative or unpleasant, but not abusive. And then others felt it was mixed, neither primarily positive nor primarily negative. Needs to have some positive to be scored 5. So it sounds as though the discrepancy is really whether there was any positive affect or no positive affect. That's the question. So for those who...
definitely positive affect.
So Eli's saying there definitely was positive affect in the transcript. And if that's the case, even if it's a little bit, you need to score a 5. And that's where Jeremy put it, and that's where Eli put it. Now, if anybody disagrees who placed it at a three, that there's no positive affect whatsoever, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace. But Eli is swearing up and down that there was some positive affect.
Swearing up and down.
I mean, I have the transcript here. If you can think of a place where you see it, we can
I can pull up the transcript, but
I have it. Can everybody see my transcript? Okay. So if you have a keyword that you want me to find for you that might take us to a section, I can do that.
I'm trying to think of the keyword. I mean, it was when he was playing with the dolls. And he expressed a lot of positive emotion between the dolls, that they love each other. I believe it was the doll parents take care of the children.
All right, so here, I love you, you love me, we're a happy family. So right exactly, there.
That was just one example.
Yeah. Already, we're in five range. So I hope that addresses Myrov's concern. I think it's a lingering concern, but hopefully we're able to distinguish between the three and the five.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
What Sorrel said in the chat, like, from my understanding of affect, when we were doing it, if there was any type of abuse, it already like couldn't make it to the like to that five category. And it sounded like there was like a lot of even just like verbal like excitement in this like one. So is that like true? I don't know.
If a negative event is described, but the outcome is positive, the narrative is described in a way where the positive outcome holds more weight than the painful experience affect, or if there's truly an equality between unpleasant and pleasant experiences. It doesn't say, an abusive experience doesn't rule out a five that I can see here, unless the story ends up or the experience ends up negative. But if the child is talking about an abusive experience and then he or she says, but I worked it out with my parent, it's a five.
So like I'm thinking about the part of the transcript where the child is talking about like the cake, and I don't know if that's really like abuse, but like there were a bunch of different instances where they're talking about an event negatively. And like very negatively, getting like really upset, very like heated about the conversation. And then there's absolutely no resolve. They just move on to a different topic because the child doesn't want to talk about it anymore. So mm-hmm. to me, that doesn't sound like there's any positive comeback out of it. And
true.
That's why I put threes, because I was thinking if there's absolutely no resolution to this, even if
right.
there's those little instances of the positive, it felt like the majority of her stance was so negative.
Right. So first thing I have to say about that is that there's no abuse in that story. Because I'm familiar with what you're talking about, and there's no abuse. Second of all, if you were to just coding that section of the transcript, I would totally agree with you. It would not warrant a five, but we're rating the entire transcript, its entirety. So what Eli had pointed out is that there was some positive affect in another portion of the transcript, and you have to count that toward your rating, your overall rating. So,
okay.
You know, sense. Another way to do this, and I've talked about this with Michelle and Janelle before we even started last semester. So way back last summer when I was working through this coding system and learning it myself, and Brian and I, you know, attended this workshop with the two of them. The question I said was, when we're coding, we're going to be coding psychotherapy transcripts. What would it be like if we broke up the transcripts into two? you know, at the 22 and a half minute mark. And so my coding team would rate both halves of a transcript. And they basically, you know, you could do that, but that's not the custom or the convention that's used in the literature in the use of these this coding system. Other researchers who've used it to code psychotherapy transcripts did not use it that way. So I'm hesitant to break up the transcript into pieces and then you write each piece. Although that would give us more information, it's not the convention that's used in the literature. So I would prefer to have you guys rate the entire 45 minutes using the eight dimensions one time rather than two times. It's less work for you too, but it does require you then to like keep the entire session in your head rather than focusing on one area where I agree with you. If you were coding only that area, it would be a three or less. The problem with coding transcripts is that we didn't train like that. You guys all trained on little vignettes, which were like a paragraph long or less. Some of them were just a few sentences. And that's how you train, because those are the examples that were in the book. And I basically just photocopied the book and I sent you the PDFs and you rated them. And that's how we trained. Now I'm giving you much, much more information to code than just a little vignette. I think it's hard. I think you guys are feeling the adjustment of that. But if we decide we want to go with the scores G from now on, I think we can get better. I'm hoping we can get better at taking into account the entire transcript, not just sections of it. Does that make sense, Elisa?
That makes a lot more sense, actually. I think that would have changed a lot of my even like answers too. You know, I wasn't thinking about even if there's like instances if it up like the opposite. I was taking only what I saw the majority of in a lot of my like coding. So that definitely would change the way that I went about things.
Right. I see there's a lot of chat. Oh, go ahead.
I also think that like just with this in itself, we like a code book, like if any positive affect or if not, if the outcome is positive, whatever, score 5. So like, I think we could work with this very well. That's my opinion.
Okay.
That gave me more hope that, like, this conversation.
I have no doubt that we can become reliable on either of them. I think, right, because we did the math last semester. It's going to take about 9 weeks to code all of this. So we don't need to necessarily even make a decision this week, but we need to in the next, like, couple weeks to be done by the end of the semester. I think, you know, it really comes down to, do we practice on the scores G, which seems to be everyone's preference because it's shorter, quicker, and I think definitely we're going to be able to get reliable quickly, or do we use scores Q because it gives us more information and we already are there? I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. Speaking pardon the students, I'm going to say scores G, but I could definitely... I think within the next 2 weeks, whatever we decide to do, we'll be okay with. It's kind of my conclusion.
Okay. I hear that. So someone in the chat, I think it was Sorrel, asked a question about if it's four must be the does not apply category. So Sorrel, the four category is does not apply for only some of the dimensions. Other dimensions,
yeah, I asked before we talked about it.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, look at that cute dog. I think you showed her to us last semester, right?
I'm sure I did at some point.
what's the name?
Her name's Hava.
Hava, right. Hi, Hava. She's a cutie. Yes, 0.7 is hard to get in Pearson. That is true. It's easier to do intra-class. I don't do it because in SPSS, if I wanted to calculate interclass, I'd have to do interclass one at a time. I have to calculate it every single time. So every person with everybody else, it would take me hours and hours. So I do the Pearson because it's much, I can do everybody at one time. And it's a proxy for the interclass. So yes, the numbers are lower than what we'd expect with the interclass, but it's easier for me to do that than spend hours calculating everybody's interclass with everybody else. I think it's 13 factorial or something. But anyway, I'm happy to have you guys try the scores G on the next transcript, and we'll see how the reliability goes with that. But I would urge everybody to read the coding, the anchor points associated with each of the eight dimensions, and really review those, and also review the PDFs. If we're really going to do this right, and we really think that we can improve on our reliabilities relative to the scores Q, then we really need to do our homework and get back up to speed on the scores G. I know you guys haven't used the scores G other than this last time for a long time, but So Jeremy has a little algorithm in the chat that is good to take note of. I like that. But of course, that's only with affective quality. That wouldn't apply to the other seven dimensions. So just be very careful with that. We can take a look at some of the others. Scores G distribution.
Can we take a look at the aggression?
Yes, we certainly can. Because that was the next to most disagreement.
Perfect. Because I bring it up because I think I might be the only one. I think I rated a 4. But I'm confused that I'm the only one because I have a score of 4 for this dimension is when anger or aggression is not expressed. And then the little girl, the little boy, I feel like they were completely avoiding aggression, and the therapist kept saying, like, are you mad at me? Like a few times throughout the session, are you angry? And then the child just kind of like turned and played with the dolls or just completely avoided it and didn't express it. So for me, this one, I was sure was a 4.
Right. Now I have a question for Brian, actually. I'm noticing that the order of these eight dimensions is not the order in which we learned them in the book. And I'm not sure what the relevance of this order is. I thought, is it alphabetical? It's not alphabetical. So
it's standard deviation.
Oh, right. Sorry, I ordered them this way. That's on me. In your original Excel spreadsheet, though, you had them in the order in which we presented them in the book.
Yeah, Tom, Affect, EIR, EIN, SCD.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. So. For aggression, let's see what Jeremy had. He also had a 5 for aggression. So what do we have here? We've got, maybe it's the same problem as with affective quality. We've got 3, 3, 5, 3. So Eli put a 4 there. We got 2, which is really low. 5, 3, 3, 5, 4. Mel put it in 4 and 5. So let's look at the actual anchor points. And so we have 3 is angry, passive aggressive, denigrating, or physically abusive to self, or fails to protect self from abuse. And 5 is avoids dealing with anger but by denying it, defending against it, or avoiding confrontation. Those are two fairly different anchor points. A code of 4 is given when anger or aggression is not expressed either directly or indirectly in the narrative. So Mel and Eli felt there was no aggression whatsoever in the narrative. For five, the anger and hostility is experienced, but it's internalized in a non-physically self-harming way. And the three is denigrating statements that can manifest in the form of negative gossip, rumors, or belittling someone would be rated as a three. Teasing, bullying can range from a one to a three, depending on how it is constructed by the narrator. Self-harm is also generally coded a three. So I guess go ahead, Lexi.
I just had a thought in response to Mel. I know Jeremy wrote this in the chat too. Why I put it as a five is because one, even what you were saying, Mel, is that the child kept saying, "Oh, I'm not mad at you anymore. I'm not mad at you anymore." But he was also like explicitly mad at the supervisor. So that's why I said that he was angry and it existed because he was mad at the supervisor. But I put it at a five also because it seemed like he internalized it more as opposed to like being physically abusive or angry.
Yeah, the supervisor it's a good example. I forgot about that. I'm also looking at my notes and I wrote for score of five, anger can be acknowledged but not processed in a mature fashion. And I wrote in parentheses, suppression and avoiding confrontation. And I actually do think that this child really tried to avoid confrontation. So maybe it is more of a five.
Right. I just have a question then to clarify.
Yeah.
Maybe I took my notes like wrong because I have like for a two and a three, like, well, I for a two, like intent for aggression. And then for a three, well, that's one of the notes I have for it. And then for a three, I have like belittlement and like passive aggression.
Yes.
And I felt like passive aggression and like belittlement, definitely I saw. Like, I can remember the child had said, like, the therapist had said, like, what would you say to the supervisor? And the child was like, I would tell them that they're stupid and dumb and all those different things. So I took that as like belittlement. And then that was also like intent for maybe like aggression in my head. Maybe that's why I rated it so low. But then there are also moments of like passive aggression. Like I remember sometimes like even like laughing because the child would say like something and I could just tell it was somewhat like sarcastic or like obviously no, or like absolutely yes. Like the child was saying things very like obviously annoyed and obviously angry to me, but maybe I was reading it wrong. Even like the exclamation points to me gave it away. Like, did I miss like read that then?
Well,
maybe
when I want to hear from Jeremy, who's our gold standard for the day. You put it in five, Jeremy. Can you defend your five? Because I think Elisa makes some good points.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it with, I was rating a three more as like self-harm and intense anger rather than the passive aggressive. But I do see also another example of passive aggressive with the mocking voice. There was a session, there was this part where the kid was saying, repeating everything in a sing-songy voice. So I think actually a three might be better.
Right, especially the denigrating remarks toward the supervisor would certainly count toward a three. Which means that the lone person who gave a two, I forget who it was, actually might not be so far off after all. Who was it? Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, so that you might be you're back in the ballpark actually.
Because I think in my notes I wrote intent for aggression, but I think that was meant more physically in the reading. I think that might be where my thought for that was, but definitely like I write notes next to every like line that I see a big theme, and I wrote passive aggression so often that I just felt like it was like one of the key themes that I saw. I think for the Q sort too, like there's one of those marks. I think I put that like as the first thing I put in E.
So for a two, let's explore the two. Anger tends to be expressed outwardly, but the behavioral manifestation is usually less than it is for a score of one. Where the two, intent to act aggressively without necessarily acting on impulses, is often described. Does she say, I'm going to kill that supervisor if I see him?
No, she said, like, I would tell him that he's stupid and that I hate him and that, like, all those things. So I think that's where I got, like, that intent for aggression. But aggression, I think, is meant more as, like, a physical aggression.
Yes. So yeah. for a two, there has to be a physical threat.
Okay, yeah.
So I think the consensus is that this would be a three for this transcript. All right, so we have investment in emotional investment in relationships. What did Jeremy say? He put it in three. Okay, and what do we got? We've got two, three, four. Those are all fine. One is low if we're using Jeremy here. Three. One is low. Four, three, 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 four, three. So there were two ones that everybody was pretty well bunched together, but I think the two ones messed us up here. So for emotional investment in relationships, we're talking about somewhat shallow relationships or only alludes to others versus one tends to focus primarily on his or her own needs and relationships, has tumultuous relationship or has few, if any, relationships. So who wants to talk about that one? Sorrel and Elisa, I'm looking at you guys.
Sorrel, you can go.
I mean, it seems undeniable that, like, primarily relationships are about meeting her needs, like, overarchingly. Like, there are some sections where, like, it suggests, like, an interest in relationships beyond that, but, like, by and large, no.
All right.
The stroller scene, or like the clips of the baby carriage that she was like so intent on having, felt like the therapist had mentioned, like, we don't want to like interrupt their session. That would be like rude, you know, like it's private. What if there's something that's being shared that you don't want to hear? There was absolutely no care in the world. Just wanted that stroller. I don't know why it was like a baby carriage or something. Yeah. There were other parts too where it seems like even with like the cake incident with the supervisor, like there was no thought about how maybe that wasn't appropriate or like you know, right for this setting. Like they wanted a cake, they wanted it now. There was no other like, you know, answer. So it just felt like to me everything was like, I want, I should get.
And also, this child wanted to interrupt the sister's session, I believe. It's been a while since I've read this transcript, but and there was no concern about the sister. Now, you could argue, well, how many siblings, you know, show concern for each other? But that would be an example of not really caring about another person. And then this patient denied wanting to interrupt when obviously they did. But I want to hear from the threes. Why give this child any credit for emotional investment?
I'll give it a four. And I think she had, or he had, some really nice moments with the therapist. Even in the beginning of the session, the child comes in and is like feeling really happy and excited to show the therapist this new song and this new dance. And then they actually did the dance together.
So to me, that's them working together. That's the child being emotionally invested, and that's quite positive.
So for a 4 or 5, narratives shift from I and me to we and us. Does the child refer to that they and the therapist as we and us, or are they still stuck in the I and me? That would be one indicator of a 4 or 5. Or talking about a friendship. You know, we went to the store together. We went to the movies together. We did this. We did that. Did we hear any of that?
I remember, well, this is like, I remember seeing a lot of like name one, name two, name three, which were all, she was talking about different friends. Which
yes.
I think I really did three. And I kind of forget what three is for this one right now, but
it's somewhat shallow relationships or only alludes to others.
Right. So I think I rated it a 3 because she alluded to these friends multiple times. But I also do see that she was not concerned for her sister. So it's kind of tricky.
So I guess the question, Lexi, then becomes, do we give her some credit for the shallow reference to these other friends? Because the name one, name two, et cetera, exactly right. Those are friends. Do we give her some credit for that? Or do we focus exclusively on the complete disregard of the sister?
And I think that's why I ended up giving it a 3, because they didn't talk about like how she acted towards the friends. They talked about how she, or they alluded to the friends, and the sister was the only instance, I think, where she was saying that she didn't care. And so maybe I took it as like not what you were saying before, not really caring because it's a sibling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now Taylor,
she did say, "Oh, my friend at church," though. That's how she learned the pom pom song or something like that.
Right. Okay, so she learned it at church. And so we won't hurt ourselves. We went to Anne's house. We need to be careful. So there are some references to we and ourselves. And so that actually, I think that would bump it up from a 1, at least. At least.
So then, like we mentioned with AFF, like, are we thinking more affect? Like, is this like another case where everything is looking more like as a whole, or like,
yes,
if there's one instance of it?
It's as a whole.
I know we're looking as a whole, but I guess when I see like these larger instances of something, I immediately like pull those out and associated that as automatically making it lesser. But if there's like one, like those small like we's here and there, I still need to take that into better consideration, I guess. Like,
yeah. So
still
the frequency versus salience question is where, you know, a rater has to take in his or her own judgment about a situation. Let me give you an example. I'm thinking about the CPQ. Which some of you, Taylor's been trained in that. CPQ is the child psychotherapy process QSET. And I treated this kid, this is going back a number of years, back in the late 90s, foster care kid, 6 years old. We're role playing. So I think I'm a monster and he's playing something else. And we're running around the room together. And he suddenly stops and he pulls down his pants. That's never happened to me before, and it's never happened to me since. And I very matter-of-factly said to him, "Please pull up your pants." And he did. He pulled up his pants and we continued playing. But, you know, one of the items in the CPQ is sexual issues are discussed. Now, it was one incident that happened in a 45-minute session. But the salience for me anyway, I don't know about for him, but for me, the salience was very high, so much so that, 25 years later, I'm still remembering exactly the moment when that happened. I was so shocked internally. I tried not to show it, but that just left a total imprint in my mind that I can never, it'll never leave my mind. So sexual issues are discussed. I put that in pile 9 because it was so salient, right? But it happened only one time. It happened for 5 seconds. So salience can persuade you to rate an item higher than maybe you otherwise would. But also you have to consider number of instances, right? Is it sprinkled throughout the session? And if so, if something is sprinkled throughout the session, you need to really capture that in your rating. So I know that Jeremy in the chat said instances trump salience. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you have to make your own clinical assessment of that. Brian, you want to say something?
Yeah, I think that, these type of situations, it was more forgiving on the Q sort than it's going to be on the scores G, because I think that both arguments are valid. So all I'm really going to say is trust your gut. Like, what do you think is the takeaway from this session? Does the salience overcome the frequency depending on how salient it is? But with so little room for error, I wouldn't overthink it. I would just say, this is what I'm feeling, and go with it. I know that's not a straight answer, but I think that's the best we can do right now.
Based on what I'm hearing about the transcript, though, I think a 1 is too low. I've been convinced that we should be considering 2, 3. I think 1 is too low, though, given what I've heard and some of the evidence that's been presented. Right, especially the shift from I and me. There is a few instances of we and us in there. I'm not saying that a 4 is the right answer. Maybe a 3. Sorrel can move up to a 2. That's good. Elisa, can you move up?
Definitely. Where did we say that like we would?
That would be a 4 or more.
Okay.
But the preponderance of the session is, I think, very 3-ish.
Right.
So I think a 4 might be too high. But on the other hand, I mean, if you're giving a lot of emphasis onto the we and us or we and ourselves examples, I could see why you'd put in a 4. But the overall preponderance of the session really, I think, strongly screams out for a 3. That would be my vote for that. All right. This is really great discussion, and I'm more hopeful. Hopefully we'll boost our reliability next week. If not, we're gonna have to go back to the scores queue. All right, because the number one issue for a researcher is reliability, because if your reliability sucks, you're not gonna get published. I don't care how interesting your findings are. You might have a significant result that is going to change the world, but if you don't have adequate reliability in your coding system, no journal is going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. That's just the reality, because then there's no confidence that what you see, someone else off the street is going to see the same way. And so if you don't have any confidence in it, then you don't know whether the results are BS or not. So reliability is so important, and I'm willing to give you guys a chance and see if you can improve your reliability with the scores G. If not, I'm serious though, we will have to go back to the scores Q, because you guys did so much better on the scores Q in terms of reliability, even though I know that it's much harder and on the whole more time consuming. But let's give the scores G a chance. I sent you a transcript. It's 1847, 1827. I don't remember what is it? It's 1843. Transcript 1843. Give that a shot. And we'll see how it goes. No scores Q this week. We'll just do the scores G, and we'll see how it goes. But really, if you really want this to work out for you guys, you should really review the 8 dimensions, the PDFs that I sent you, and the coding system, the anchor points at the bottom of each of those pages. If you, for some reason, destroyed your scores G PDFs, I can send them out again. Just email me and let me know. But if you have them, that's great. Then I don't have to do that. But really go back to the source material and review. That's what I would do. Hey, Myrov.
Hi. I actually found over the weekend, I was looking for them all in one place, and I found a PDF of the whole book.
You mean on the internet?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It must have been, how many megs was that?
How many what?
Megs.
It's not so big.
You want to send it out to the group?
Yeah, sure. I can do that right now.
Can you send it without having to put it in Dropbox or something? It'll send?
I can just send it in one.
Great. Then I'll have it too. That's great. Excellent. Thank you. So everybody feeling good? All right. So I'll catch you guys next week. Brian, could you just hold on? Just stay on with me for a few minutes? Thanks. All right. Bye, everybody. See you next week. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Andy doesn't know that we're off.
No, I don't think so.
Is there a way I can disconnect her?
Sorry, I will.
Okay.
Sorry, this is hard to move my hands, but yes.
All right, thanks so much.
No worries.
All right, so thanks for your input. I wanted to keep you on because Fran frantically, she left me two.
I was actually going to ask you to stay on to continue the conversation, so we're on the same page. Yeah,
all right.
So,
she left me two voice messages at two different phone numbers, and she emailed me. I thought she was going to text me, too. My gosh. I was actually going to pick up my daughter from school. I couldn't, you know. It was like it was an emergency, but what's the emergency?
It was not an emergency. The conversation, because I talked to Fran today.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, you know, I'm very close. Well, you said it yourself. I've done like 3 dissertations at this point.
Absolutely.
And the conversation essentially we had was she doesn't feel comfortable signing off on what we've previously done. She wants to add something to it so that she feels that she is in position to be, you know, chair and that she feels comfortable signing off on it. And the reason that she called you is because she wanted to ask, how different does it have to be in order for her to sign off on it? And I was really hoping the answer would be not at all.
That is the correct answer.
Okay, because Fran, for whatever reason, feels uncomfortable doing that, though. And I respect that in the sense that she, you know, it's someone else. It is essentially our work, let's be honest here. And she doesn't feel comfortable just signing off on it. That being said, I really don't want to have to go through additional scores and stuff in order to complete that.
Right.
No,
I hear you, and you shouldn't have to. So let me just offer some ideas. Mm-hmm. The first idea is that I'll respond to Fran, and I'll give her the answer that, in my opinion, you don't have to do anything more. And that she should feel comfortable signing off because I'm Jeff Goodman and I published like 80 articles in my life, you know, and she hasn't published any. So, you know, I could try to pull rank on her a little bit. On the other hand, she is the chair. So, and I don't know how amenable she'll be to me, like, you know, pulling the seniority card on her. But she could still say, no, I just don't feel comfortable. So in that scenario, I wonder how you would feel about approaching someone else. And I have someone in mind, but I, I wonder how you'd feel about that.
Well, I mean, the ideal situation is I just approach you and we call it a day and we finish this up by the time you leave, but...
I just, you know, and I really like you, and mm-hmm. I we work really well together, yeah. as well as any student I've ever had, to be honest with mm-hmm. you. But I would feel bad because I've turned down two other students in your class.
So all I will say about that is I've talked to Eli and Shira, and their response was, actually, I think Eli came to me and was like, man, you must be lucky having Goodman doing your chair. And I told him, no, he's not. And he was like, what? Which was the same reaction as Shira. So all I will say is that based on conversations I've had with them, it is more surprised that you're not my chair more than disappointment that you're not their chair. So I'm just going to leave that where it is.
Well, all right. So I could reach out to the two of them and ask. I really feel bad for them because I told them no. And especially Eli, I mean, he practically begged me. Yeah. Shira wasn't quite as, aggressive. But Eli mm-hmm. was, and I said it was a hard no. I'm not doing it. And so mm-hmm. it feels hypocritical of me to then say yes to you when these two folks had previously approached me and I said no. And especially in Eli's case, where he would have been willing to work on a data set of my own. Right. Shira, I'm not so sure. I think she had her own ideas and she just liked me and she wanted to work with yeah. me and I like her. So I feel bad. I mean, I could approach those two and ask them essentially for permission to work with you because I don't want to be a hypocrite. So that would violate my moral code.
I definitely respect that. But as I said, again, I don't want to put you in a position you feel uncomfortable with, but based on just me being friendly with both Eli and Shira, I don't think you are crossing any moral boundaries.
But I know they both wanted to work with me and I said no, yeah. you know? So it really doesn't have anything to do with you per se. It has to do with me. So that's one issue. I could approach both of them. I could certainly do that and see what they say. Another option for you is a different chair. Now, Mark Diener just literally joined the faculty and he is superb. And I actually get along very well with him. So he's another option. And as far as I know, he doesn't have anybody on his slate, right? So he's an option. And another option would be Dustin Cahood. Okay. He would be another option too.
Like I said, you are still my first choice for and beyond like anyone else. And if you're still feeling uncomfortable, I'm going to respect that. Yeah, because really, I mean, this is my plan mentally, just because I kind of want to do other things. Like, I still haven't even started the write-up for the other project that we're working on. My goal, honestly, is just get the edits back from wherever. Like, send the official IRB proposal. That should probably be step one. Send official IRB proposal for dissertation. Make changes. And I double-checked. Apparently, I'm going all over the place right now. I checked with Ripo on their website. Mm-hmm. All the reviewers are in, but they have not made a final decision yet. That is where we stand on that.
Okay. Well, regarding IRB, I mean, I have IRB approval.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because it was my understanding that if I was doing a dissertation that I had to reapply for IRB approval.
No. At least that hasn't been the precedent for the last 23 years, unless something's changed recently, you know, that is not true.
Okay, then that's a non-issue. Then it's really just flipping it, turning it into a dissertation and calling it a day and moving on and working on the other project.
Exactly.
Which is kind of the goal right now. So like I said, I'll leave it in your court then. I would still love to just finish this off with you as my chair, and we could even flip print. I like working with Dr. Dallas. Like, if she wants to be a committee member on this and she's already in so deep, I'd be okay with that too. So whatever you feel comfortable with. If not, then I would ask you to talk to Dr. Dallas.
Yeah. No, that's my job to do. So yeah. I think for me, the steps will be reach out to Eli, reach out to Shira, get responses from them. If they're okay with it, then I'll email Fran and tell her that, you know, after talking with you and thinking it through, it would be just easier for me to be the chair. And if she wants to stay on as a committee member, we're both in agreement about that.
Okay, I think that's a good plan.
All right. So it's just, you know, then it means I have you as a chair and I have Holly as a chair. Because I already...
I'm still going to get done first.
Well, I know that you're right about that. You're actually right about that. I mean, do you think, is it possible that you could defend this summer?
Absolutely. Like I said, if the plan is to take what we're already publishing, assuming that this gets accepted,
right,
we just have to make the edits and it's a published paper.
Yeah.
And to quote you, it's ass backwards.
Yes, it is.
But I don't see why not.
Okay. So that's what I will do. I will approach Eli and Shira, and I'll see what they have to say, and I'll let you know as soon as I hear back.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dr.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, you too. Bye-bye.